Welcome back to the third week of My Consumerist Week. This is our third episode, 3 weeks in a row. We're getting started here. I am your co-host, Tyler Mitchell, with my good friend to my left, Tyler Berry.
Spider-Man. He's not an adult or a spider.
He's a teenager. We saw Spider-Man Homecoming.
He won't get tried as an adult because he's still a spider kid.
If only we could restart, then we could
We're
restart.
We're not restarting.
We're not going to. To my right is my girlfriend, Catherine.
Hello.
Hi, Katie.
She also saw the movie Spider-Man Homecoming with us, which is why she is sitting to my right. So I guess we're just going to dive right in. We don't really have a format for this. We're just going to jump in.
We're never going to have... Dude, this is like our lax show. This is our lacrosse show. We're never going to have... Can you not look at me like that when I make jokes?
I looked down. I did not look at you.
Exactly.
There was no eye contact.
This is our show where we're just... I mean, we're just going. Okay. We're going. So talk. Talk. Say words.
Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yep.
Unmitigated response.
You didn't say words. It's a great... I really like this movie a lot.
It was very good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So I would go...
Better than what I expected, I thought.
I would go so far as to say that it is probably my favorite movie of the year so far.
Oh, man. This is great because if you listen to last week, I said that Baby Driver was my favorite movie of the year. So this is really interesting to hear your...
I'm reflecting on everything that I've seen this year again. Mm-hmm. And if you are listening to these in a row, then you know exactly what I've seen.
And I was going to say, because if you listened to last week, we spent literally 25 minutes straight talking about what came out this year.
And I'll put it in a different context. I'll put it in a superhero film context where this year I have seen Spider-Man Homecoming, Wonder Woman, mm-hmm. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, and Logan.
Right.
If I was going to rank them, I would say Spider-Man is a clear first, then Wonder Woman, then Logan, then Guardians Volume 2.
Word.
I don't know. You have all...
I think
the,
I
both
would
of
put
you,
Guardians in front of Logan, but that's my
That's your
personal
opinion. Right.
And, it's really hard for me because, like, you know, if you listened last week, I talked about... I raved about Logan. I love Logan. The problem is I also just... I was so pleasantly, surprised by Wonder Woman that it's hard for me not to put that near the top of my list. It's really hard for me to rank these superhero movies this year. It's not, for me, a typical year of superhero films. Because you think about last year, it's like, oh, cool, we got Deadpool skyrocketed to the front for me immediately.
It was different.
Also, we got... fucking Batman versus Superman, and I know. Stop. Just don't look at me like that, Tyler.
I'm not looking at you. You keep telling me I'm looking at you.
You literally looked at me. I'm sorry. Tyler likes this movie a lot more than I do. I'm not a fan of it. I know Catherine is not a fan of it either. I like the director's cut much more than the regular cut, but it still doesn't do it for me.
Yeah.
It does not do it for me. Anyway, this year has been really hard when it comes to superhero movies because I think everything so far that we've gotten has been really well done on one level or another, especially Spider-Man. I mean, from the jump, that POV... that POV movie sequence was great.
Right, where he was shooting.
Yeah, he was
Civil
shooting.
War, he was shooting his own film.
Oh my!
Him and Happy.
Like, it's one of those things where you think you had to do something to sort of bring a Fox franchise into
Sony.
But also Fox. I mean, Sony and Fox, right? They were... Yeah, because...
Fox didn't own the rights to Spider-Man before.
Okay. Well, you had to bring a Sony franchise into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. This was a really good way to do it because it combined Spider-Man with an MCU, a very iconic MCU scene, which was the big fight sequence from Civil War, and it just involves Peter Parker literally like using a GoPro to film himself getting involved with Tony Stark's side of the Civil War in that movie. And it's just, it's brilliantly done. It's really funny. And it, I loved it. I love that sequence.
I'm gonna take this moment to warn all of you that there will be spoilers Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yeah, sorry. I did that last week too. If you're listening to this, it's going to be titled correctly, so you should probably understand that this shit is not spoiler free. I'm sorry, it's not. It's just not.
Okay.
So anyway,
growing up as someone who has played Spider-Man video games and read Spider-Man comic books and seen every Spider-Man movie and watched Spider-Man TV shows and all these things, I liked the Tobey Maguire movies when they came out quite a bit, more than quite a bit. I love those films. I don't think they've aged very well. I am in the minority in saying that I don't think they hold up well over time whatsoever.
Yeah.
I really liked Andrew Garfield's take on Peter Parker. I feel that him and Emma Stone as Gwen Stacy were fantastic in those movies. As hit or miss as those movies are, they're both great. Spider-Man Homecoming feels like a high school movie in a way where the last five Spider-Man and The Amazing Spider-Man did not feel like high school movies, even though they had quote-unquote high school characters in them. Tobey Maguire was, you would never mistake him for a high school student ever. Sam Raimi's film did not feel like it was trying to do high school.
And we literally like talked about this in very quickly as the movie was beginning. It was like, from the jump, Homecoming felt like Peter Parker was actually in high school. And I know that has a lot to do with the fact that, why am I forgetting his actual name?
Tom Holland
is only 20 years old. Right. So
just his whole personality.
Exactly.
He was so
yeah.
happy and excited. Like he was brand new. I mean, he was brand new.
Yeah.
All of it.
And
but just that he was.
That's actually a really.
So happy about what was going to happen.
Yeah. And you know, that's actually a really good.
Avenger.
That's actually a really good point. Cause it really did feel like Tom Holland as a person was happy to be that character. Like,
what's
that Peter Parker has never felt more real on screen than he did as Tom Holland. Like,
well, think about it. He is how old?
20.
He is 20. How old was he when Iron Man came out?
12?
11? 11 or 12.
Younger, yeah. Much younger than all three of us sitting here right now.
So he's a kid who grew up with Iron Man being a thing.
Right.
He was in primary school, as they would call it, when Iron Man hit and became this worldwide phenomenon.
Right.
Now he is acting with Robert Downey Jr., taking on the role of Spider-Man. His exuberance comes out on screen. He is being thrust into this universe. And my favorite thing about, I think, I can't say it's my favorite thing about it, but I really like that John Watts and the entire production team, while this felt a big part of the Marvel Universe, the forefront of the film was about Peter. It did not, and as much as Tony was in it, a bunch of the fan criticism when the trailers came out was, oh my gosh, look how much Tony Stark is in this. There's going to be so much Tony Stark in this movie. Oh my goodness, this is going to ruin this take
really
on Spider-Man.
Not in that
he's
much
barely
of
in
it.
He's barely in the movie.
Four scenes?
Something
and
like
you
that.
Know, I have to admit, I've watched like five different versions of the trailer, and I was kind of the opinion I've seen the whole movie, right?
Right.
I mean, I saw all the highlights, I saw all the funny parts. You kind of thought you knew how this movie was going to go.
Mm-mm.
And that's actually not at all what you got in theaters.
Right. And I leaned over to Tyler at one point just to remind him of, like, if you guys remember how crazy, like, the Spider-Man 2, the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man 2 trailer was. It's like, it showed freaking everything. Mm-hmm. And to the point where I watched it the other day, just like I was watching everything Spider-Man movie related to get hyped for this. God, that movie shows, I'm sorry, that trailer shows everything to the point where it's just obnoxious. And it's like, why would I ever watch that movie again? This movie, and I, when the first major trailer came out and it came out that Peter Parker was going to lose his suit because Tony Stark was, I mean, frankly, was pissed at him for what he did. Oh my God. I leaned over, I talked to you guys about it, and I was like, I really don't like that. I think that they showed too much. I think that that revealed way too much. And it ended up not really being the focus of the movie.
Truly, I don't think it ruined anything.
It didn't. It didn't at all. And it made me so happy. Like, I was so nervous that it was going to be a Spider-Man 2 scenario where that moment happens in the trailer, and then the rest of the movie is just ruined for you. But it didn't happen in Homecoming. Frankly, that moment in Homecoming doesn't really... It matters, but it doesn't really take away from the back third of the movie. It doesn't really take away from the third act of the movie at all.
And my least favorite part of the entire movie is when Peter has a fight with the Vulture and mm-hmm. he ends up under a pile of rubble and he's trying to push up the rubble up from under him and he can't do it and he's struggling. And we hear in his head, Tony say again, if you aren't some, like, what is it? If you're not someone with, if you can't,
if you need the,
if,
suit.
If you need the suit, then you, like.
Yeah, if you're not anything without the suit, then you shouldn't have it, basically. Right.
And he says it in the movie, and then like 20 or 30 minutes later, mm-hmm. we hear him say it again in his inner monologue. And I was like, I don't need that. I know that. That was like the one decision throughout the entire movie that I didn't agree with. But other than that, casting was perfect. It was such a good... I love that movie. It was really good. I have not nary a bad word to say about it.
It's hard because I'm trying to do a better job than I did last week because I was so hyped up on Baby Driver that I couldn't say a bad thing about it. So I'm trying to be a little more conscious about this movie. But the problem is, God, I love this movie so much. Like, it's really hard for me to find a bad thing to say about it. Yes, I agree with you that that little moment wasn't great, but at the same time, it didn't take away anything from me when it really boils down to it. Like, yeah, it's a little cheesy for that line to be repeated in the scenario where it's repeated, but at the same time, I sort of get it because it's like, it's Peter realizing who he needs to be even without the suit. It's Peter realizing that he needs to be without the suit. He got the suit too early.
You're thinking about it the wrong way. It doesn't take anything away. Everything that you put into a film is supposed to add.
Right.
It's never supposed to repeat. It is supposed to repeat. You're supposed to call back on themes and, you know, you have Chekhov's gun and all that stuff.
Sure.
It doesn't take away from the film. What it does is it treats its audience as stupid. Do you not remember that time? The last time we saw Tony Stark, Robert Downey Jr., one of the most famous faces in Hollywood, he was on screen 20 minutes ago and he said this line. Do you remember this line? No, well, we're going to repeat it to you right now so you remember it.
That's how
it plays to me, and I mean, that's just because I'm a cynical person, and I've seen so many friggin' movies, and I've studied film, and that's how I feel about that line, and people will feel differently, and that, if that's my only gripe with the entire movie, which it is, then I'm fine with that being one.
And yeah,
gripe.
I wasn't coming at you about it, I was just saying,
right.
I just didn't feel that it really made that much of a negative difference to the film regardless. Like,
now that I'm reflecting even more heavily on it, I feel like the last final battle with Michael Keaton as the Vulture was kind of... in Marvel movie traditional fashion, lackluster.
The Vulture is not a great villain. I don't think in any respect the Vulture is a great villain.
There are many comic book fans who would disagree with
you. Okay, and that's fair. I don't have any qualms with him
as a villain. That the other battle sequences in the film were good. It has the Marvel thing.
It's got nothing to do with them being good or not. I agree that they were good. I think everything from the way it was shot, I think it was fantastic. That fairy sequence was awesome, and we'd seen half of it in trailers, and it still was phenomenal seeing him like go through the entire sequence and like use his webs and like his web grenades to like bring everything back together to make sure like that fairy didn't fall apart. That was awesome. I loved that. My point is like I don't know. It just, for me, that villain wasn't everything that I think people would want it to be, considering it was a villain that hadn't been depicted in the movies before. I think that's really what it boils down to. Like,
you're selling Michael Keaton short.
I'm not trying to sell anyone short. I think Michael Keaton, I literally leaned over to you and was like, dude, fucking Michael Keaton is awesome. He was awesome. It's got nothing to do with him. It's more about the villain in itself. I don't think the villain, Vulture, is that great of a villain.
Well, I will admit, I don't know the comic book version of the Vulture at all. But I do think towards the end, there is a humanizing moment of him. I think, huge spoiler, you find out that he is, in fact, Spider-Man's, Peter Parker's crush, his girlfriend's father.
Right, yes.
In the end, so I think...
Spoiler.
Yeah, spoiler. That's what I said. Yeah, it's a huge spoiler. I think there's a humanizing factor there, where you don't want Peter Parker to totally, you know, destroy him to some extent.
And
I'm not shocked. I mean,
yeah, it shocked all of us.
That coming in the movie at all.
And I've known Tyler for 12 years, and we've seen a lot of movies together, and I don't know if there's ever been a scenario where the two of us like simultaneously just grabbed each other out of like
shock. And a couple times.
A couple times, but especially the Michael Keaton reveal being MJ's dad. I thought you were joking because you know more about the Spider-Man comics than I do, but I was legitimately, and you were too, I was legitimately shocked that was a reveal. And I think that's a testament to the movie, is that it was written really well when it comes to those kind of things. Like, should we have probably guessed it? Maybe, but the fact that we didn't, it's a testament to how well that was written. And the fact that you and I literally like jumped and grabbed each other and were like, holy shit, that is what this reveal is. Like, I think that's a real testament to how well this movie was written.
I mean, there's a bunch of things about this film that like, from the opening where it is a POV story, student film essay,
so
to Donald Glover being Prowler, to Pepper Pot showing up, to like like there's multiple times where I was just kind of like, this movie's knocking me on my ass, to where Marissa Tomei at the very end of the movie is Aunt May, and she finds out that Peter is Spider-Man.
Yeah,
and she's like, what?
That's
the
hilarious.
Like,
I gotta
the
tell
movie
you.
It hits the tone, it knows what it's doing, it is it, it and it works.
So
And I told Tyler and Katie, like, I'm not sure there's ever been a sequence that's made me, like, legitimately just immediately start sobbing. But the moment that Pepper Potts walks out of that, I'm about to start crying right now. The moment that Pepper Potts walks out of that door, I mean, that's not something I ever expected to see again. Like, that's not a character I ever expected to see again, especially considering that Downey Jr. is done after these next couple Avengers movies. Like, I thought, and I just watched Civil War again, and I just watched, obviously, that sequence at the beginning where Tony Stark is giving the speech at MIT, and the part of the speech comes on the teleprompter where he's supposed to introduce Pepper Potts, and Pepper Potts is obviously not there, and he goes into a thing about it, and but man, oh my God, I almost lost it. Like, I thought that it was just so well done. It was so well crafted.
Well, here's the big secret about Tyler Barry is that he really wants to be a surrogate father to Gwyneth Paltrow's daughter, Apple. And now all of you know that. Oh, God,
because and that's a really terribly stupid joke. Thank you.
I just wanted to get that Barry, off my chest.
God, I hate you so much.
I thought it was pretty good.
It was a great joke.
I mean, I connected the dots
but
pretty
see,
quick.
But see, if I had made that joke, you would have thrown me out the fucking window right now. So
we don't have a window.
You do. It.
That's a door.
Anyway, it was just one of those
okay, well,
sequences.
Let's talk about the mid-credits and the post-credits.
Sure, let's do it, yeah.
So, mid-credits, what did you think?
I'm so focused on the Pepper Potts sequence. So the mid-credits sequence was, fuck.
Do you remember?
I literally can't remember
it
now.
It's not good if you guys can't remember it.
Oh my God. Why can't I not remember?
I'm not bringing it up.
Michael Keaton in jail.
Yes.
And whoever...
Someone comes up to him.
It's not a guy. It was the guy who was trying to buy the weapons off him on the ferry.
Right.
Comes up to him. And they talk about him. He says, I've heard tell that you know who Spider-Man is.
Yeah.
And he's like...
He's like, if I knew who Spider-Man was, he'd be dead already. So,
kind of defensive.
Apparently, internet hubbub is that guy has a scorpion tattoo, which I don't remember, and that he could possibly be the scorpion in a future movie.
Interesting. Well, which,
whatever.
That was a great sequence, just because I really loved that scene when the Vulture is taking Liz and Peter to the dance. Like, that whole sequence, it was probably the most tense I've ever felt in a Marvel movie. Because I don't usually get tense, so to speak, during
the
a Marvel movie.
The end of Civil War, where he's about to find out that Bucky killed his dad, did not make you tense?
Ah, shit. Okay. Yeah. I feel that. That was more expected, I guess.
Really?
The fact that you didn't expect Michael Keaton to be Liz's father.
Okay, well, yes. No, when he opened,
I'm with that.
When
exactly.
he opens the door, and you see it as Michael Keaton, that threw me for a loop.
Yeah, we the three of us, like, I don't know if you could, you could have cut the tension with a knife in that sequence. Like, the three of us were just like, what the fuck? But. Yes, I get what you're saying. For me, that sequence when Liz gets out of the car when Liz gets out of the car and the Vulture says, hey, honey, just you go in. Let me have a minute with Peter. Gotta give him the dad talk.
Yeah.
And then he pulls out that gun and holds it up to the headrest of like passenger seat. Oh my God, that was a phenomenal sequence. Like, it was those type of things that made that movie probably my favorite in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, because mm-hmm. it felt different. It didn't feel... That's a sequence that didn't feel like a Marvel movie. It felt like a good versus evil movie in a not cliche way.
The whole thing, I mean, they set before even the Marvel Studios logo comes in, we're setting up Michael Keaton as this
Which
guy.
You should say that Katie called. Katie called
so
that.
So the opening of the film starts with the Sony and then the Columbia title cards. And then they go straight to the movie. And I'm like, well, they're really not going to put Marvel Studios on here because, I mean, it's not a Marvel... It's technically not a Marvel Studios movie per se.
Right.
And Katie was like, what?
I said, give it a minute. It'll pop up.
It'll pop up. And I was like, no, that's crazy. And we get this whole 4 to 5 minute sequence where Michael Keaton is trying to take Chitauri weapons after the Battle of New York from the Avengers.
And Katie called the shit out of it, dude.
Yep, that's true. And I would like to correct myself. I keep calling Liz MJ. She's not really MJ because we find out that MJ is really Zendaya at the end of the film.
Which
is weird.
I don't know. It made me really happy.
Even though it's not really...
But it's not...
It's not MJ. Yeah, that's her initials are MJ.
It's not, but... Okay, can we talk about Zendaya real quick? Am I the only one that thought she was going to have a much bigger role in this film than she did?
I mean...
I thought she was going to be more of the focus than Liz was. But, I mean, I don't know. This is just me. She was great. That's the problem for me is, like, she was freaking phenomenal. She was funny. She was so funny.
She was funny.
She was so
funny. I mean, all the high school kids were funny.
Ned was awesome.
Ned, what's his name? Jacob Battleon.
Mm-hmm.
As Ned, was a funny dude.
He, on a very, very superficial level, like, the dynamic between him and Peter felt like what you and I were in high school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then that's what I kept thinking throughout the movie, where it's just like we were just dumb kids who liked to do what we were doing and build Lego Death Stars, even though that's not what we did in high school. But it was just like their dynamic was like really resonated with me a lot. I think they had a very accurate dynamic of what two very close friends in high school would have. Like, that part of the movie was really important to me. Like,
there are a bunch of fan throwaways in this movie. I mean, I was excited to see Angry Rice from The Nice Guys as Betty Brant. And those of you who know who Betty Brant is, mm-hmm. that will excite you. I mean, there was... The Tinkerer was in this movie. Like, as I said earlier, Prowler was in this movie. We had Shocker. I mean, it was like... There were fan throwaways after fan throwaways after fan throwaways. And if you know these things, then you'll see them. And if you don't, then it won't matter.
Right.
But they were put in there not in a distracting way. They were put in there under the radar in a way that I can really respect. And it's weird. And it's what I said earlier that, I mean, this totally fits in with the Marvel Universe. And you get Tony Stark and you get Happy and you get Pepper and you get Avengers and you get Steve Rogers. But all those things are at best tertiary to what's happening. And I mean, I guess Peter is trying to become an Avenger and he keeps calling Happy and wanting to be with Stark. But like, that's not the crux of the story. It's not shoehorned in there. It feels organic in a way that is commendable.
I think that's what I like most about this movie is even though it's centered around something that's not real, it feels real. Like, the characters feel real.
It feels like they're high schoolers.
Well, at the end of the movie, that's what I said. I said that Tom Holland as Peter Parker, just the whole movie itself just felt like what Spider-Man should have been. Always been.
Exactly. I mean, absolutely.
It felt like it was all about high school. It was the same kind of humor and wit and
the only person
lifestyle, just everything about it just seemed very much it was they were teenagers. I mean, and that's
no doubt.
What I think Spider-Man was.
And it's like I've reflected on Sam Raimi's original Spider-Man, and the only person who even feels somewhat high school age in that movie is James Franco.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's in his early 20s and not his mid to late 20s. And it's just, it's a weird film to go back and watch.
And guys, I'm sorry. Go back and watch those movies. They're not that good.
Dude, people are gonna have their nostalgia
blinders on. No, criticizing anyone for liking those movies. I'm just saying, if you haven't watched them in a long time, I don't think you're gonna like them as much as you remember. Because I certainly didn't.
At least the first one. The second one is still a really good movie, and it is flawed in a lot of aged ways, but it's not.
And like, the third one can get fucked.
Well, the third one's bad. But the first one feels old. It feels old. And that's because it's a product of its time. It was the early
2000s. 2001?
2002.
Jeez.
Or maybe it was 2001.
2001.
Either way, like, it's pre-superheroes dominating filmdom.
Exactly.
Like,
absolutely, yeah.
That it was a new thing. And Spider-Man and X-Men, the original X-Men film from Bryan Singer, are the films. You say what you want about Batman and Superman in the 70s and 80s, and I guess Batman in the 90s if we want to go there. Spider-Man was 2002.
Okay, cool.
It feels dated.
Mm-hmm.
And that's partly because Sam Raimi... I'm alone on an island of film students and film connoisseurs of thinking that Sam Raimi might be the most overrated director.
You're not.
His stylistic tropes, like every director does, but there's no substance behind it.
But, don't get it twisted. We both very much like Cabin in the Woods.
And? That's not Sam Raimi.
That's Sam Raimi influence, though.
Okay.
But I'm just saying.
That could
like,
be anything.
That's not what I mean. It's, but... That's
no,
that
I appreciate
type, that's
the
that
Evil
type
Dead,
of,
the Evil Dead 2, fine.
Yeah, that's I know. That's different. That type of film that... If Sam Raimi hadn't done Evil Dead or Evil Dead 2, that's not the type of film that gets made in 2012.
11. I can't remember when that came out. No, that's fine. Anyways, go see Spider-Man Homecoming if
Please
you haven't.
Please do.
And if you haven't and you're listening to this, that's weird. We spoiled almost everything that... you would want to be surprised by, so I'm sorry.
Just go see Baby Driver also, because we
talked
about
that
last week.
Right now, because I saw it again.
Oh, yeah.
Katie, you saw Baby Driver with me. What did you think?
I did see Baby Driver. It was great. It was not, as you had said, this comedic is what I was expecting from the trailers. I think there was a little bit more heart to it, but it was wonderful. I loved it.
And I feel like...
I would rate Spider-Man above it, though, I think.
Yes, it is. I think Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yeah.
While less...
And I just saw Baby Driver a couple days ago, I will preface. It's
all right,
only
so,
been a couple days.
So since Tyler and I, if you listened to last week, Tyler and I talked about this. So, Katie, what is your movie of this year so far? Like, what's your favorite movie of this year? Because we talked...
Oh,
were you kidding me?
That's
we extensive
because you know me and you know
I know what
is.
It is. Shit, why did I even ask that? I'll answer for her.
For
it's
those,
fucking
Beauty,
it's Beauty
and
the
Beast.
It is.
I didn't think about it.
How many times have you seen Beauty and the Beast this year?
Plenty. And that's a whole different story because I am a huge fan of the original. And I know that the remake can't come close, but
we were watching a damn soccer game couple weeks ago at your parents' house, and Katie
was
watching
the movie. Yes.
I forgot about that.
She really likes that movie.
Yep, it's a great film though.
But as far as you know, comparing it to other movies that I have seen, if you want to go theatrical, you know what movie is made better?
Baby Driver. Baby Driver is a more original and technically impressive and standalone and all of that stuff.
Spider-Man is still...
Well, we're going to see it. We are going to see it with my family on Sunday. And we're going to go with my mom, who has seen every Spider-Man movie. And she's going to be sitting there at, like... Who is Robert Downey Jr. playing? Why is Gwyneth Paltrow in this? She's going to be like, what in the world is going on here?
I did not grow up watching... superhero movies.
Right.
I did not grow up reading comics, but for some odd reason, the movies that my parents took me to see were the Spider-Man movies.
Saw the Spider-Man movies.
Yeah, every time a Spider-Man movie came out, we went to see Spider-Man. So, as far as superhero movies go, I mean, they're all just so much better than the original Spider-Man.
Tom Holland's energy is infectious.
And of all of the Spider-Man movies.
Spider-Man.
Tom Holland has my heart for Spider-Man.
He's so good.
All the Spider-Man have gotten better as the movies have gone on.
Yeah.
Back to Baby Driver. It is hard for me to recommend. I enjoyed Spider-Man more, which is weird for me. I mean, being such an Edgar Wright fanboy. And it does come down to it being that Baby Driver just does not have the Edgar Wright sense of comedy that I've come to expect from his films. And that's not
sure
a knock on the film. It's not trying to be funny. And that
it has its moments.
There are
absolutely
it's an Edgar Wright movie. There are funny moments in it. But like based on his filmography and the trailers, I was expecting another Edgar Wright movie. And I did get another Edgar Wright movie without the out and out comedy that comes with it.
You were expecting the beginning of the Cornetto trilogy 2, right?
Sure.
I mean,
I guess. Maybe a standalone, but like I mean, you go through all of his movies, even Scott Pilgrim, which is not a part of the Cornetto trilogy, it might be his funniest movie.
It
might be.
I'm with you.
It depends on your personal opinion.
No, I'm with you for sure.
All four of those movies are amazing, but they're all laugh out loud funny. There are moments in Baby Driver that make you laugh, but none of them are like belly laugh moments. They're just not there, and that's fine. But that's not what I was expecting. And maybe after I let it settle and I go and watch it again later, I won't be expecting it and I can just enjoy it for what it is, which is a technically impressive, well-shot, well-edited, constructed film that is unlike anything you're going to see this year, and you should definitely see it.
Doesn't it... He's not the type of guy to view it like this, but God, from a technical standpoint, it feels like a fuck you to Marvel from an Ant-Man standpoint. I said I don't think he's actually consciously doing that, but dude, that movie is so technically well made. Like, that's the type of shit some of those shots, I'm sure that's what he was trying to do in Ant-Man that didn't get done.
Marvel is on a tight schedule.
I know, but that's what
Edgar
I'm saying.
Edgar Wright takes time. No, I get you.
Yeah, I'm not and saying not, he's doing just, it on purpose. I'm saying that...
It's just how all of his movies are. He takes time, and they're well thought out and planned. He has a very unique visual style. And it would not... As much as I would have loved to have seen an Edgar Wright Ant-Man, and I love Ant-Man for what it is...
Me too. Talked about it today. All three of us really dig that movie.
I don't know how much of his script is left in there. It's still a funny movie.
It's funny if you think about it. I just don't know if a inherently comedic director can helm a Disney-centric film. I mean, what did we just see with the Han Solo movie? Like, those boys are off of it. Edgar Wright was off of Ant-Man after a while. Like,
well, that's assuming that Disney has autonomy over the Marvel Studios films, which they don't.
They and you do? Know
that. No, they don't.
No, Tyler.
Kevin Feige runs that shit, and you know he does. Yeah, he does. So he's not the one. Disney's not running that. They're just not, and you know that. So don't be irresponsible and say that they are.
But at the end of the day, it's Disney throwing that money out there. They have the say. I don't know. For me, it's just like Edgar Wright's off that project. He's a great comedic director and he does things his own way and on his own schedule. Phil Lord and Chris Miller are great comedic directors and they do their things on their own schedule and in their own way. And they're off that Han Solo project. I don't know. It just, to me, it feels like maybe there's just a certain type of director that is just not right for what the Disney company wants. And it's not a criticism on either side. Sometimes things are just not the right fit. It's just an opinion.
And it's one that's not without merit. I'm trying to think of comedy films that have been released recently.
The Tooth Fairy.
That was like a decade ago. The Rock, I'm sure, is quite pleased with the way that it performed.
Hey, we're excited about Jumanji, so fuck it. Like, I'm ready for that movie.
And it's weird. I mean, Disney doesn't... You look at the track record of comedies in Hollywood the past couple of years, they're not making comedy films.
They as in Disney.
Yes. Yeah. And none of their subsidiaries are. That's just not what they're doing. They're making family movies, and if sometimes they happen to be funny, then they're family comedies. They're not just going to make an... Oh, no. You're not seeing them make a PG-13 version of frickin' Neighbors. They're just not going to do it.
They're not making Central Intelligence, is what you're saying. Yes, sure. I got you. Yeah.
That's not what they're in business for. No. And that's fine. They make plenty of money doing what they do, and they own Pixar and Marvel and Lucasfilm, so they're going to make money forever. I don't remember, this was so long ago, the crux of the division between Marvel and Edgar Wright. I'm pretty sure he wanted autonomy on final edit. He wanted to do the movie his way. Marvel and Feige expect a certain amount of through line and continuity with
absolutely
their films.
Yes,
and
yes,
which
yes.
He probably wasn't comfortable with. And that's all fine. That's Hollywood.
Kathleen Kennedy is the same way when it comes to the Star Wars franchise. Kathleen Kennedy is the same way when it comes to the Star Wars franchise. So yes, you're right.
Anyways, see Baby Driver. See Spider-Man Homecoming. Those good
Speederman.
Movies. Yes, the Speederman.
Can we talk about staying on the superhero level? Can we talk about Batman and Mr. Freeze, Sub-Zero? Which I watched this week. I was house-sitting for a very good friend of mine this week, so I had a lot of time to watch some shit, and one of the things that I watched that I had never seen before was Batman and Mr. Freeze, Sub-Zero.
A 1998 directed video superhero.
God, I loved it. Dude,
It's good.
Okay. I have always been a proponent of DC animated films, especially as when they're concerned like over Marvel films. I think Marvel animated is garbage compared to DC, and that's one of those...
Everyone thinks that, but yeah.
No, I know. It's just one of those funny things where it's like, man, Marvel live action has always been so much better over DC live action films, but God, DC animated has been better over Marvel animated. Like, and look
Nolan
no further than Batman and Mr. Freeze. What?
So Christopher Nolan would like to have words with you.
Christopher Nolan and I can get together for drinks anytime, baby, anytime.
Chris, you don't make me all right.
But man, Sub-Zero is so
really good,
dude. It's
well,
so good.
It's in the animated library with Batman the Animated Series and Batman the New Adventures. Like,
and it's got the same animation style as those shows, which makes me really happy.
It's all... I love Batman Mask of the Phantasm, and this is a standalone sequel to that.
I mean,
Sub-Zero,
I guess if
you know anything about Batman the Animated Series, you know about Sub-Zero. It is a well-regarded film.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't know, without giving too much away, the main plot of this hour-long standalone feature is that Mr. Freeze's wife, Nora Freeze, is basically in a coma when this movie starts. She's in a coma, and I don't quite remember what her ailment is, but essentially she needs a blood transfusion from someone who has AB negative blood, which is like the rarest blood type that there is. Flash forward, and one of the few people that Freeze finds who has this rare blood type is Barbara Gordon.
Bra-bra.
So, huh?
Barbara Gordon
is Barbara Gordon, who
is Batgirl.
Is Batgirl, and also who Tim Robin is dating at the time.
Dick Grayson.
So, early on in the movie, Barbara gets kidnapped by Mr. Freeze, and hijinks ensue. You know, because that's the way you describe everything.
If you have seen Batman and Robin, you know the Mr. Freeze subplot in that movie is basically Sub-Zero.
Yeah.
Except better. You should watch it if you like Batman the Animated Series or if you like Batman at all. It's a great movie. I'm excited that you have seen it now and like it.
Yeah.
It's really good. I had it on VHS tape as a kid.
It's wonderful voice acting from everyone. Kevin Conroy. Everyone who was in, who were the voices in Batman the Animated Series are still in this. And God, for only being an hour long, it's just so well done, so well voice acted, so well written. Like,
it's good.
Man, it's so good. It is so good.
Mm-hmm. What do you want to talk about now? You want to keep going on your list? Or do you want me to come to mine?
I mean, I want to talk about something that's probably on both of our lists.
Go for it.
Can we talk about Contradiction?
Contradiction Spot the Liar?
I'm so excited.
Which, Katie, you have not seen.
Oh, God.
I have no idea.
We'll probably watch some of it later.
Can you please... I want you to... I need you to just go on a tangent about this. Because this is my favorite thing you and I have watched together in 11 years, probably.
So, when we say we watched Contradiction Spot the Liar, we did not watch Contradiction Spot the Liar, like, on YouTube or anything. We both subscribe to Giant Bomb.
Shout out Giant Bomb.
The video game website. We are both premium members to their website. And they had a playthrough of Contradiction Spot the Liar, which was originally an iOS game for iPads and iPhones, eventually coming to Steam and the OS X systems on the App Store.
Yeah.
The Mac App Store. And it is... detailed as Contradiction, the all-video murder mystery adventure. It is a full-motion video game. For those of you who don't know what FMV or full-motion video is, it sort of is like a movie. There are movie clips. They're compressed. They don't look great. They're usually shot on a budget, so they're not fantastically acted or lit. They're damn fun. So, Contradiction Spot the Liar.
Can I say something real quick?
Go for it.
My favorite example of something FMV related, and I really, really hope that you know what I'm talking about, Ty, is Night Trap.
Yes.
A game that was on
Sega CD.
Sega CD. Thank you. Yeah. Night Trap. Watch out behind you. Night Trap.
Stop it.
You don't want me to sing the whole thing?
Not doing
okay,
Night Trap,
sorry.
We're doing Contradiction. So Contradiction was produced by Tim Fallon, who was a video game music producer who did a ton of soundtracks spanning from the Commodore 64 all the way up through the Dreamcast and the PlayStation.
The Dreamcast.
The Dreamcast. Echo the Dolphin.
Oh my god. Oh my god, he did Echo the Dolphin. Oh.
So like,
please play Echo the Dolphin.
This guy, they kickstarted this. It was kickstarted, and they gained just over 4,000 euros, and that's all this game cost to make.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Holy crap. Dude, can we make a FMV game for $4,000? Because we should do the shit out of that.
Well, that would have been like about $7,000 or $8,000.
Okay, whatever.
Right there.
We should do the shit out of that if we make a game for $8,000.
Based on what... I mean, I've watched the whole thing twice through, plus this third time watching it with you. The UI is garbage, and the menus are terrible, and it's made for touchscreens, and they just ported it to computers.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
The real fun of it is that it's a crappy, campy movie murder mystery where you're trying to catch people contradicting their own lies while investigating a murder.
Damn, is it fun.
It's just cheesy and stupid and great, and you need to play it. You need to try and go watch at least some of it on Giant Bomb or YouTube or whatever. It's not an expensive game. You should get on this. It's so good. Like,
as far as
even
like,
if you watch it on something, you should probably buy it because that will make them want to make a sequel. And I doubt that. I mean, it was kickstarted, so
yeah,
they don't need to really recoup their budget. But it's not a huge game in the first place. And I would love to see a sequel to this. It is so fun.
I I would love to play through it with you. Like, it's one of those things where if we're talking, like, there have been things that I've been thinking about when it comes to us where I want to do video content. And right. This is the first thing that I was like, man, it would be really fun to do video content for this. And he obviously, you can't see it, but he was just pointing at his girlfriend, Katie, like, it would be really fun to take Katie through this game. Yes. Like, that would be freaking hysterical. And I think we should try to make that happen at some point.
You would like it.
Because it's really cheesy and stupid and fun. And I think it would be the perfect game to get you into. Like, I think it'd be really fun.
All right.
So what else you got in your list over there?
I want to talk about something that's been a huge, like, I've been a huge proponent of for a long time, which is games done quick. Twice a year, this company, Games Done Quick, does a week-long marathon, basically convention, called Games Done Quick, and it brings together a community of speedrunners for video games. And if you don't know anything about speedrunning, it's what it sounds like. It's basically people who break games to the point where they can speed through them as quickly as possible. And they do that on a level where they stream it and help donate, basically bring together money and donate money for good causes. So right now, they do one at the beginning of the year, usually in January, and then they do one in the summer, in June, July, called Summer Games Done Quick. And right now they're doing Summer Games Done Quick, and it's benefiting Doctors Without Borders.
Mm-hmm.
So for a week straight, it's just people who are marathoning, speedrunning through games, trying to help make as much money as possible for a good cause, which is this time Doctors Without Borders. So I've been watching through it all week, and there's been people speedrunning through Portal. Like, yesterday I watched a dude speedrun through Portal in 13 minutes, which is just unbelievable.
I can do that.
I've seen you play through Portal. It does
12 minutes.
Nope.
Yep.
You do not.
I challenge you, Mystery Man.
He will kick the shit out of you.
I don't know if I can beat the first level of Portal in 12 minutes. Which is sad, because that first level is pretty easy.
It's very easy. Yeah, man, this is one of those things that actually means a lot to me, because I don't think people give enough credit to the gaming community on a level of what they try to do for other people. I think a lot of people think that gamers are just lame nerds who don't really give a shit about anything else.
Or they are who? What's been a big public face of gaming in the past 2 or 3 years?
Vin Diesel.
Really? Vin Diesel's who you go with?
Dungeons and Dragons.
I was going to say Gamergate.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
that stuff gets publicity.
Anita Sarkeesian. And yes, you're so right.
Like, that's what you see.
That's a real problem for me, because I don't know. For a while, I tried to be a games journalist, and it didn't work out for me, and I'm okay with that. I don't really mind that my life didn't go in that direction. I do sports stuff now, and it's awesome. It's very cool for me. But, like, I think there's an inherent, like, issue with a lot of people thinking that gamers are just selfish nerds who live in their parents' basement, and that's all that they're going to do for the rest of their life. And there's just a huge community of people that do a lot of things to try to help others, because they know that if they were in that situation, they'd want to be helped too. That's what I love about Games Done Quick, is it's this whole community of people fucking around with games, being like, oh, hey, I know how to break this game, and we can do it for fun, and we can screw around, but we can also do something that's really, really good for an entirely separate community that may not care about what we do at all. And it makes me really happy. And I've been supporting, like, I've been watching this all week, and I've donated a couple of times, and I just, it's one of those things. And by the time you hear this, the whole thing's going to be done for the time being. But I hope people who listen to this will take it to heart, and the next time it comes around at the beginning of 2018, that people will really get on board with it, because God, it's so cool.
Yeah, I mean, they raise millions of dollars. Man. Be on the lookout when it comes back around in January. By the time you hear this, it'll be done.
But it comes stuff. Around every year, and every single year, every single time they do it, they make more money than the last time. It's so awesome, and I love the causes that they work for, and I love the people that do it. It's one of those things that I haven't been playing a lot of games myself lately, but I've been watching a lot of content when it comes to that, and that's one of those things that really means a lot to me.
Mm-hmm. What else you got in your list there?
But as well as Contradiction. Can we talk about Solitarica?
Solitarica, one of the best games of all time.
God, dude.
And I am comfortable saying that.
I love that game so much,
because I play it constantly.
You do.
I'd like you to talk about it. You're the one who introduced me to it, so.
So, Solitarica is a game where you're basically playing solitaire, but it is a...
It's a battle solitaire, basically.
It is a battle solitaire, sort of... I don't even want to describe it.
I mean, you did... I mean, that's really what it is. It's...
But it's more than that.
It's...
I feel like I'm shutting it, just cutting it short.
It's player versus computer solitaire, basically.
It's a roguelike. It's a roguelike RPG.
Very good. Thank you. Exactly. It's a roguelike. Yeah.
And they just released a new update.
Which I can't download because it keeps crashing for me.
Really? Because they released an update to the update.
Did they? Okay. Well.
And now it works totally fine. It was having cloud sync issues. It's a dollar update. I think how much did you get the game for? It was $3 when I bought it a year ago.
Three.
So it's three. So four for the updated version. You pick a deck which will have a specific set of perks and bonuses.
And if you know anything about like Magic the Gathering or any kind of like RPG, it's like you really pick a class. It's like a rogue, a paladin, warrior, mage, things like that. So
I have sunk so many hours into this game over the past year.
I was kicking the shit out of a run at your parents' house the other night, and then
it'll still come.
I lost on the last boss, and I thought I was gonna cry. I really thought I was gonna cry.
I've broken the monetary system in the game. I have thousands of gems.
Wish you could trade that shit to me, but
that game is something that everyone owns an iOS device and loves card games or RPGs or roguelikes, you need to check that out. If you're a gamer who has an iOS device, play that game. Which leads me into, I also played a lot of Drop 7 this past week. Which
is cool.
A puzzle game that
It's
been out for years, and it's my standby puzzle game. If Katie and I are watching something that doesn't need my full attention, it's something I pull
out.
Everything. Not everything. That is not true.
Awesome.
Like today when we were watching Real Time with Bill Maher, I pulled it out because it's just people talking. I don't need to watch their faces while they talk. That's something I can play Drop 7 to. Yes, play Solitaire, play Drop 7. They're fantastic games.
I jumped into, and I told you this through text message today, but I jumped into The Witcher 3 DLC.
Don't spoil it for me.
I won't. All I can tell you is that it's fucking phenomenal, and it's terribly hard. If you're not leveled to where you need to be, it is hard.
I will be.
I know you.
I'm not worried
I know.
About it.
Yeah, I mean, I know.
New
I'm
game plus,
saying.
Baby.
No. But dog. It's got nothing to do with new game plus or not, because new game plus is gonna level up to you, my dude. So
I understand.
Anyway, it's very.
But no,
good.
I'm really
it's,
excited to get to that. But that leads me to why I haven't gotten to that. And I sort of blame you because you sort of pushed me into buying
oh,
it.
God.
You didn't push me into buying it. You convinced me.
I don't push him into anything.
No one pushes him into anything.
Exactly.
I love having a little
Catherine
beer.
Schulteis
it is a
knows
delight.
What the fuck
it is
up.
A delight.
It's my girl right here. Like,
This past week was Xbox Open Games Summer Sale or whatever. So I bought Deus Ex Mankind Divided Digital Deluxe Edition for $22.50.
My guy right here. I'm so excited for you to be playing this game, man. I'm so excited.
I don't know how many hours it's been, but it's been a lot of hours.
And you like it, right?
I love Deus Ex
I know.
Human Revolution. And then when the scores came out for Deus Ex Mankind Divided, I didn't really feel comfortable sinking $60 into it. So I sort of let it fall by the wayside. And I understand a lot of apprehension people have about it. It feels like an up-res sort of extension to Deus Ex Human Revolution. The story's not fantastic. The gameplay is really reminiscent of the first game. And I am also a big part of why people soured on this game is it's sort of... And it's why people are a little... apprehensive would be the word for Detroit, the new game from...
Yeah.
The new Cage game.
Mm-hmm.
This making
Detroit
augmented,
become human.
Yeah, Detroit become human. Making augmented human beings or robots a metaphor for race divisions and tensions is problematic at its core because it just is.
Yeah.
That's something that I'm coming to this game to have fun, and the gameplay in this game, the exploration and the stealth is something that. Since the original Deus Ex and Project Snowblind and
other stealth games. Talk about taking it back, dude.
I mean, Splinter Cell and the other Metal Gear Solid games. Stealth games are something that I love. So I play this non-lethally. I play it stealth in the shadows. I have not killed a single person in my 15 to 20 hours playing the game. Like, that's what I love about Deus Ex.
Yeah.
The story's fine. It's going to lead me from point to point. It's dumb, stupid action... twisty garbage novella stuff is what it is.
Dude, I have the best idea for video content, which is us doing a side-by-side playthrough of this game.
Because you just kill everyone?
I fucking just rip, dude. I just rip through everything.
I haven't killed them.
Are you kidding me? I kill every single person I see.
Last night, I killed the same guy 3 times in a row and had to restart for my autosave point. And I did not, okay, so I knocked him out non-lethally and then was dragging him into a secret, into like a corner of the room. And the game glitched out 3 times in a row where I was dragging him against the wall and the wall like gripped his arm and then flung him. And then I was like, crap. So I'm going to cross the level to drag him back into a corner so no one would find him. And it said he was dead. I was like, I didn't kill him. The game killed him.
Dog, I will just rip through everyone.
I haven't killed a single person. I refuse to kill people. That is how I play that game. It's part of.
All right, we're gonna have to talk more about this because we might need to do that as like some content. But I'm really glad you're playing that game.
I'm
makes
excited
me really
to be playing
happy.
It. I love the original. I played through it twice.
Yeah, I know. I knew you were gonna dig
stealth
it.
Stealth games are my thing.
I knew you were gonna dig it, especially. Knowing how much you like Splinter Cell and
oh
you grew
goodness.
Up with Splinter
They're all
Cell.
Over there. I don't even have a way to play some of those games anymore and they're over there.
Can we throw into a little music before we jump out of here?
Yeah, go for it.
All right, well, I've been listening to a lot of Saint.
Cool.
Taylor Jardine's new band. Mm-hmm. Taylor Jardine from We Are the In Crowd. Mm-hmm. I really dig it. Man, I really dig it. It feels the same as We Are the In Crowd, probably because the drummer and Mike, the guitarist, are literally in that band as well. The only guy who's not in it is, I can't remember, the guy singer. I can't remember.
Everyone's favorite, the guy singer.
The guy singer. I don't know. I've always really liked her as a vocalist. I think she's really
she
good.
Sing.
I hate to say it like this, but she feels like a poor man's Hayley Williams, and I don't mean that as an insult. I just mean it as I don't think her content lyrically is nearly as good as Hayley's. I think Hayley is a better writer, but I think Hayley's probably one of the best female writers in existence right now. So it's not at all an insult to Taylor, but I don't know. Saints really good. I really dig it. I really dig the aesthetic. It's got a, her videos right now have a similar aesthetic to everything that's going on in the pop punk scene, which is like all this colorful, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, everything's very colorful. Everything's very like 80s influenced.
Well, that's
like,
just music in general. Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The
80s
thing is...
The 80s thing is really interesting. And I don't hate it because I love 80s music.
Yeah, I'm with you.
If you've listened to anything from my album, I there's certain things about it that I love. Like, I just love 80s music.
I'm shocked to hear you say that.
But, yeah, I really like Saint. I'm cool with the new Jay-Z album. We talked about it today. 444. There's things about it that I really like. But at the same time, it's one of... I told you today, and I hate to say it like this, but it's a technically great album, but it's not a fun album to listen to.
Aging hip-hop artists more than any other type of musical artist have the tallest mountain to climb.
Yeah.
Like, that is not something that anyone has done gracefully. There is not a 50... I don't even think there's a 40... Maybe there's a 40-year-old who's still killing it, but like a 40, 50, 60-year-old who is still making relevant music.
I think
that's not a thing.
You're right. I think the best example of someone who did that, has done it really well and embraced age really well in the hip hop community, is that Tribe album
from
2016. That's different. That's not like that's on another level. And that came out in a time when it needed to come out.
It's not like NWA is still together putting
absolutely.
Touring and putting stuff out. Like,
No.
It's a weird musical space to be in. Like, Eminem...
Yeah,
as popular as Eminem always will be, he is not... And probably is a good thing, is not who he was in the late 90s and early 2000s.
Yeah. And Cube's not who he was in the...
Are you telling me the man that starred in Are We There Yet can't put out some gangster rap and really put it down? Is that what you're telling me?
I'm pretty sure at this point I could put out more coherent gangster rap.
Are you telling me the man who starred in the Are We There Yet sequel, Are We Done Yet, can't put out some gangster rap and really lay it down? Is that what you're telling me?
Can you just continue with what you were saying? Because you were making very coherent statements until you decided to be an asshole about it.
Is the man who starred in Ride Along
Stop!
And Ride Along 2?
God damn it.
I'm just asking for Ice Cube's benefit. Can he put out something and still...
For your benefit, he's going to shoot you in the face.
Okay, well, tell the founder of Big 3 to come see me at my apartment and shoot me in the face and see how that goes for him. Not that he'll ever hear me say that. Whatever.
He listens to every episode of this, even though we haven't put out an episode yet.
Fantastic. I'm going to go through some quick hits here.
Yeah,
Katie,
do it.
You're going to chime in because you watched some of these with me. Katie, how did you feel about Moneyball?
Moneyball. I thought it was a really good movie. I am not gonna lie. I think I was expecting a little
more.
Bit more.
Yes, I am with you.
I know because hindsight, it was nominated for a lot of different Oscars. I know it didn't win anything, and I actually think rightfully so. I'm actually surprised it was
nominated
for as many categories as it was. Even after the movie was over, I said, I actually kind of even expected more from the story. I mean, I know they set a record in their own way. And they did set
what was it about
for what baseball clubs started to do who had low budgets.
Like the Red Sox, yeah.
Because I absolutely understand in baseball how a small market team is an immense disadvantage over
right.
the other, you know, for the other teams. But... Overall, I mean, I did like it.
The acting was fine.
It was a good movie. I just don't think
the direction was fine.
Was that the first time you had seen it too?
Yeah,
both of you.
We never.
Oh, okay.
It felt like the least Sorkin project,
and it was.
It was written by Aaron Sorkin.
It was.
I almost wouldn't have known that.
He doctored the script. I don't know. He did a rewrite.
Right.
That could mean a million things. It felt. from the American president, Steve Jobs, to
I'm such a
Charlie Wilson's War, and The West Wing, and Sports Night, and Studio 60, and The Newsroom, all, and A Few Good Men, they all feel Sorkin.
This does not.
There's not a moment in that movie that you feel like this back and forth is Sorkin.
I really don't even think the dialogue. I mean, not any...
I can't
it's
think
the least Sorkin-y dialogue. No, I'm with you.
That feels like Sorkin.
Katie, how did you feel about Audrey Hepburn and Peter O'Toole and How to Steal a Million?
They're adorable.
Yes, that movie is not perfect. That movie has a lot of flaws. The ADR is terrible, and the editing is bad. There's a lot of flaws in that movie. And it gets by on its charm, my goodness.
The actors were charming. I mean, I love Audrey Hepburn. And Peter O'Toole is just a handsome...
Blue-eyed man.
Blue-eyed man.
Lawrence of Arabia.
That's a flippin' good movie. I like that movie a lot.
It's an enjoyable time. It's just a fun romp.
I think I liked it more than Moneyball, to be honest.
I've seen How to Steal a Million 3 or 4 times, and it's a better movie than Moneyball. We watched some West Wing.
Yeah.
Love West Wing.
Which is still amazing. I've been listening to a couple of... I had to go pick Katie up from the airport and drop her off at the airport. Which is a 45-minute drive both ways. So I listened to some West Wing Weekly, which is a recap of West Wing episodes by Hrishikesh Hirway and Joshua Molina, who starred on the West Wing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a fun way to recap the episodes that I've watched recently or seen years ago, and it's just fun. If you like the West Wing, listen to that. I listened to the first episode of LeVar Burton's new podcast.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Called LeVar Burton Reads.
Yeah.
And... he reads Kin by Bruce McAllister, which is it's a cool science fiction short story. At the beginning of the first episode, he characterizes it as a reading rainbow for adults and a way for him to engage with some of his older fans.
Mm-hmm.
And he has also come across a bunch of his millennial fans. And he repeatedly hears that a big bucket list item for a bunch of them is to have a bedtime story read to them by LeVar Burton. So he's sort of doing a bedtime story podcast and an adult reading rainbow put together. And it's really fun to hear. I mean, it's LeVar Burton reading adult stories to you. Yeah. So, yeah, it's worth listening to. Get on that. I only read 2 issues of comics this week, which is very low for me.
Wow.
I read the 9th issue of the new Jessica Jones run. And it's fine.
Cool.
I read it and it escaped my brain. Brian Michael Bendis is doing fine with it. It's not something,
if you're not invested,
in Jessica Jones, then don't ever pick up this newest run. I read the final issue of Volume 7 of Nova.
Okay.
I feel like Volume 7 of Nova is inconsequential, except for that it brings the two Novas together. So that would be Sam Alexander, and I'm blanking on who the original Nova is right now, and it's driving me insane. Why don't I remember? Richard Rider. It brings them together. Rich Rider was in the Cancerverse. He made his way back in this newest volume, and now they're together, and... it was like 7 issues. It was a miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
I like Sam Alexander. He's in The Champions, and The Champions is one of my favorite Marvel books currently running. It felt like a lead-in to where Marvel's going with Marvel Legacy. I'm pretty sure. I'm not positive on if they are getting a series in Marvel Legacy, but the Marvel Legacy is the upcoming big Marvel event where it'll be Riri Williams and Tony Stark and Miles Morales and Peter Parker and Carol Danvers and Kamala Khan. It's all of the legacy Marvel stalwarts like Thor and Spider-Man and Iron Man put into books with their younger counterparts, and that's kind of, it felt like this was part of that, but in a lesser way. And it was fine. They were both fine, and I don't recommend that you pick up either of them if you are not a Nova and or a Jessica Jones fan.
Word.
And that was our individual weeks
of
consuming media.
Really, really, no, just really, really rapid fire. Listen to Bleachers, listen to Muna.
Yep.
We talked about it last week in more detail, but I can't stress enough how wonderful both of those bands were when the three of us saw them in concert.
Katie, did you like Bleachers and Muna in concert?
It was so good. They were both great. I knew nothing about Muna.
Yeah, none of us did. They
wowed me.
Yep.
They wowed all of us.
And Bleachers is just amazing.
Bleachers was wonderful. Watch both seasons of All or Nothing if you have Amazon Prime. If you're a football fan, it's the coolest look at an NFL team you could possibly get. The first season goes into the entire season of the 2015 Arizona Cardinals. The second season goes into the entire season of the 2016 Los Angeles Rams, and it's really interesting. You get a good look at both, like, the offensive coordinators, the defensive coordinators. So, like, if I know you're not a football fan,
I don't care about the NFL?
Shut up!
I'm just asking.
Can you just let me talk for a second?
I was just asking. Would it be something that I would enjoy?
No. Okay. If you would let me finish, I was gonna say.
I love Friday Night Lights.
I was gonna say, if that's something that you care about, I really think you should check it out because it's really fun. It's really interesting to watch. If not, then watch or listen to any of the other 94 fucking things that we just talked about. And if you don't want to do any of that, then just tune in next week when we have 400,000 other things to talk about.
We consume a lot of media.
We do. We also consume food. Do you want me to talk about food? I can talk about food, too.
No. This podcast is already an hour and 15 minutes long.
Wow, that's a really good... It's, yeah, an hour and 17 minutes. All right, take us out, baby.
Check us out at flyoverstate.org. Check me out on Twitter at T_W_Mitchell. And T-Bear, what is your...
Check me out at the Tie Game. You can also find a bunch of my writing over at SeatGeek. So SeatGeek, the ticketing app for all of your ticketing needs. I don't know
why. And also some of your non-ticketing needs, since he's writing about things that have nothing to do with tickets.
It's true.
There you go.
Thanks, babe.
We will see you next week with a plethora of new media items to talk about. Thanks for tuning in, guys.
We love you.
Peace out.
Say bye, Katie.
Bye.
Well done.